Okay. Let's go for it, Matt.
Hey, welcome to the 12th podcast episode of With Students in Mind. My name is Matt Townsley, and with me is our humble co-host, Russ Garrett. Hi, Russ.
Hey, Matt. Trying to tweet out the link, make sure it, or check, see if it works.
This is episode 12. We are broadcasting live video for the very first time. Let's take a moment and introduce our guest today, John V, as in T, Spencer. John, tell us a little bit about yourself, buddy.
Well, I am going into the sixth grade. No, let me rephrase that. I'm going into the classroom again as a sixth grade teacher. And the last year I've been in a hybrid teacher-coach kind of model. I enjoy writing. I blog a lot, tweet a lot, that kind of stuff. That's me. I teach in a urban, low-income ELL, high ELL population district, and I'll actually be teaching English language learners this next year. And I'm jazzed about the topic of assessment because it's something I feel really passionate about.
And you're in Arizona, is that right, John?
That's right, Phoenix.
So we are warm and muggy here in Iowa, and you are warm
hot
and dry. Hot and
I
dry.
Wouldn't call it warm. Hot, hot's more like it, but yeah.
Cool. All right, well, let's jump right in here. Let's cut right to the chase. We were talking today about common assessments. So every once in a while, you know, somebody's at one of those PLC institutes, and they start going on about common assessments. So, yeah. Hear somebody talk about how in their school they have to administer common assessments. And so we thought we'd just talk a little bit about common assessments today. I know Russ and John, you guys both have experience in this area. Russ, you just want to talk a little bit about you guys use common assessments, how to use them, why to use them, and how long have you been using them?
Sure. So our sixth grade language arts team, that's four teachers. This fall, it'll be our third year together, and we're adding a new member to our team. But kind of value that we see from the common assessment is we really see the value in the conversation that happens after the assessment, and we see the assessment itself helping to facilitate that conversation. And really the big thing is that I feel like the assessment and then whatever data are produced by that assessment gives us something to discuss, and it can what do I say, like, keep us on track during that conversation.
Cool. Tell us a little bit about your experience there, John, using common assessments.
Well, I'll say that the first thing would be that when common assessments, when I was in a school that viewed common assessments as a multiple choice kind of thing, it was painful, and I really fought against the notion of common assessment and, quite honestly, the notion of PLC because of the lack of teacher autonomy. I was already doing authentic assessments, and so the idea of being forced to do something common wasn't really all that common. It was more standardized. And the assessments weren't created by the teachers. It was just copying multiple choice questions from a database from the textbook CD-ROM that was given to us. So that tells you how backward it was even on a CD-ROM. And I really didn't like the idea of common assessment. I loved the idea of assessment and how that drives future teaching and how that drives intervention and enrichment and how it allows students to own their own learning and figure out where they're actually at in terms of progress towards standards. I didn't begin to really like common assessment until I was on a functional team, where the culture of the team was good, where we had shared values, where we had kind of the right mindset about learning. And then all of a sudden it was amazing because we were planning these assessments. They were authentic. They were realistic. They fit what we actually had taught. They tied exactly into the objectives. It tied exactly into the standards. And then for the first time I was on a team where the conversation was about learning rather than the conversation being about discipline or about people not liking how badly behaved some kids were or, you know, griping about administrators. It really shifted the focus to learning.
They do that?
And so
only when administrators aren't around.
Of course.
Yeah. And then by another teacher kind of being humble and vulnerable about where he was felt weaker, it gave us the permission to honestly look at the data and say, hey, what did you do that was working for you? Who had stronger scores in that? And without any judgment, just what strategies did you use that worked? And so we actually felt like we were kind of co-researchers in an informal way. And that was on the most functional team I worked on. So
that gives me a place to jump in. One of the things, I had this conversation actually with my principal this morning. It was an awesome conversation just about common assessments and what we ended up talking about was like common misunderstandings about common assessments, that kind of thing. And my thought is that the idea is I'm cool with, like John said, you know, you've got the teacher who it's usually one of three things. Either the teacher doesn't say anything, you know, they don't want to talk about what happens in their classroom, or they feel like something bad happened in their classroom, you know, their kids didn't learn something or something like that, or they feel like their kids learned something, it was awesome, and they had a great day, and their students were learning. And after celebrating that, or consoling, the question has to be, you know, okay, so how do you know? You know, like, what, and that question has to be asked in a in a nurturing way, if that's the right way to put it. It's not like, let's say that a teacher wants to celebrate that their students really learned a ton. You're not asking how you know to make them prove it. You know, it's not, oh yeah, well how do you know that? You know, you're asking how they know so that you can find out. Well, how do you know that? Well, because they, whatever, you know, because we did this assessment, or we did this project, or I had this conversation, or, you know, this small group came and talked to me about this, or whatever. And again, it's another way to celebrate and find out what goes into that feeling of their kids getting it. And on the flip side, if a teacher feels like their kids really didn't get it, the same thing, because you're valuing their feelings, and you say, well, how do you know that they didn't get it, you know? And you may find out that they really didn't get it. And that's fine, because now we know, and we know the process that teacher went through to find out and to instruct and then to assess. And now we can talk about ways to reteach and ways to go about it in a different way. But to me, it's just that, and I said this in the opening, but the assessment part, the common assessment, the noun, is really to get us to that how do you know stage. You know, it's tell us where that comes from. Tell us where that feeling comes from.
Well, I think that along with that is it's that concept that it's a powerful tool for students to own their own learning too. I feel like that's such a buzzword right now. I almost wouldn't say it because it's so misinterpreted. But if you walk into a classroom and a student can't tell you what they know and what they don't know, then the assessment has been virtually useless. Then it's just a great tool for you as an educator to improve your practice. But at that point, are you really guaranteeing that your students are going to master the standards?
Mm-hmm. I think the other piece that comes to mind for me, and I know I have a little bit different context than you guys, as a classroom teacher, I designed my own assessments. I taught things the way I thought was the best, but at that time, the structure wasn't in place for me to literally compare with someone else who might be teaching the same types of kids, you know, the same type of cross-section of kids from the same community or the same communities. And to really find out, you know what, maybe I'm just kidding myself, and what I think is a good understanding is not a good understanding, because I never talked to anyone else about that. And so I think that's a part of the conversation, too, as powerful as you're saying the common assessment is, John, and that culture piece, Russ. I think it's also the conversation that leads up into creating that common assessment, too, where you're collectively as a team agreeing on, hey, what does really understanding this thing mean to us? And it's not just a multiple choice question. And let's just clear the slate. When we're talking common assessments, in my opinion, we're not talking about multiple choice common assessments. We're talking about stuff that teachers legitimately dig their teeth in and say, these are prompts or questions or projects that we really feel are appropriate for our kids at this grade level with this stuff, and we're going to create a rubric or whatever to help evaluate at what level of Bloom's or wherever should they be at. I mean, this is teacher ownership as well.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, kind of similar to what you said about that pre-planning phase, one of the valuable parts of the common assessment is you really do have to ask yourself, what does this learning look like when they're finished? Mm. And creating a common assessment ahead of time allows you to do that.
Yeah.
It's that backwards design concept. But it also gets teachers talking about, what does the standard actually mean? So if the standard is bias and loaded language, you can easily go, I'll just have them look at things that have biased language, and we're good. If you're creating a common assessment, you're actually having to talk about it as professionals. What do these standards actually mean, and what is the best way to assess it?
Let's talk, too, about how that word formative is in the middle. You know, when we talk about these assessments we're talking about, can be, I don't know, we can talk about if they should be or shouldn't be or whatever, but they can be that during learning type of assessment, you know, where the idea is to be able to reteach that skill based on what you've learned from the conversation after the assessment, that it's not to see how did the kids do, but it's how are they doing.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that, Russ. And I think one of the things, and I'm starting to think in my mind, if I'm a teacher or an educator, I'm not kind of familiar with this whole idea of common formative assessments, what are the shifts in my mind, or the shifts that have to take place? And one of them is exactly what you're talking about, is having a better understanding of the idea of a formative instructional process of the purpose of creating assessments, to find out how kids are doing, not how they've done. It's not a past tense, it's to take future action. The other thing I'm thinking of is as the team decides that ahead of time, as John mentioned earlier, is saying, here's the standard or here's the big idea, and we have to decide what a good level of understanding looks like. And then we have to collectively agree on that too. That's an important conversation, unpacking the standard and deciding what that understanding looks like. I think also another shift that takes place, I'm thinking mostly of a typical secondary teacher myself in the first 4 years when I taught. I used to just, here's an assessment. How many points did you get right? How many points did you get wrong? Without really ever analyzing how well did kids understand the big ideas within that assessment. And so it's more of a holistic approach now. You might look at this prompt and this prompt and this prompt and then holistically decide based on how this kid performed, this is what level they're at in understanding this big idea. And it's more of a holistic look at the assessment and each student rather than just numbers in a grade book.
Well, and I was just going to say something connecting to what you had mentioned in the beginning about the formative assessment. I think one of the dangers that I've seen in common assessments being, I guess, misapplied is this cycle that goes on where every 2 weeks you do a common assessment, or every week you do a common assessment, and it's a summative assessment, and it might even be a good assessment, but you go through an entire week, you do that summative assessment, or 2 weeks, you do that summative assessment, and then you plan intervention based upon that. Or you revise your instruction based upon that. And really, the value in formative assessment is you as a teacher, and I don't think it's unrealistic to expect this from teachers, you as a teacher should be engaged in that formative assessment so that you can help students plan for intervention the next day or revise your lesson plans for the next day. And when you're waiting on this 1 week lag time and even giving feedback from the assessments, you know, 2 or 3 days later, I think it's too late. I think the way people learn, they need things more instant. They need things to be modified more often. And although I see the common assessment, summative assessments, being valuable in terms of talking about the data and going through that, ultimately, there's a danger in just doing that and ignoring what teachers need to be doing constantly with that formative assessment.
The day-to-day formative assessment, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny that you said that, John, because the note that I just made to myself kind of goes with what you were saying. But what I'll say is the three of us are coming from context of, you know, like I said, this will be my third year with the same group of teachers. You know, John, you've been doing this stuff for a while, and this is such a cliche or whatever, but I want to advise, so if somebody is listening to this or watching this and thinking, geez, I don't know how I'd ever be able to, you know, mesh up with the other teachers and get this, so the assessment happens today and we both take it and then I get it in tomorrow, you know, at first, it can be the kind of thing where all you're doing is getting better at the common assessment cycle. You know, it might be that at first, you know, you give the assessment or what your students do the assessment on Monday, your partner teacher, you know, just because your lesson plans aren't day-to-day the same, they might do it on Wednesday, and you talk about it on Friday. And you know what? That's okay, because you're still going to have those conversations around what can I do better next time, that kind of thing. I don't believe that what I'm saying discounts what John said or even really goes against it. It's just there's different, you know, teachers are at different places on the spectrum. And don't, you know, if you're sitting here listening to this saying, yeah, that sounds terrific, but I can't do that starting tomorrow or even starting this fall, that, you know, that's where we are as opposed to where we have been, you know. Because I know that was one of the things that really, these first couple of years with our PLC, we really struggled with that because, you know, if we couldn't do, we just had this in our minds that the common assessment, we had to all do it the same day, we had to bring our data the next day and have that conversation so that we could take it back to class the next day. And it was like, if we didn't see that happening, we just weren't going to do it because, you know, we were letting this ideal vision that we couldn't see happening get in the way of just doing something to get better at the process. Yeah, you know, I think this would be a good time to move into like this example that we brought with us.
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, so we really have no idea how this Google Hangout thing works. So we've got a Google Doc pulled up, and we're hoping that you guys can see it. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. That way, if it doesn't work, you can just pull it up on your own. We do have one viewer right now, so I'm hoping that this viewer can see what we've got. But so this is an example. This is something that our sixth grade language arts PLC, we met within last Wednesday, and we put together a common assessment. And this is the whole thing. This is the whole assessment. So those of you that are thinking, well, there's no questions. You know, there's no, like, where's the true-false type of stuff, you know? This is a common assessment. And so what happens is there's a writing assignment. This will be on the second day of school. We'll give this writing assignment to students. We'll have them write a page-ish about either their summer, themselves, or school, okay? And we just have them, basically have them write. It's a way for us to just kind of pre-assess or just assess, get a look at their writing skills. But the common assessment happens because all five sixth grade language arts teachers will be looking at the same rubrics and will be able to sit down and bring that student writing, the student writing samples to the table, having used these same rubrics to assess them. So when I say, look, you know, this student nailed it. Look at this voice and the way she's organized the paper. She's got some awesome word choice that I can really see it. What do you guys think? You know, we can pass around the assignment or pass around the writing. Everybody can look at it. We're all working off the same rubric. You know, this is an example of what a common assessment can look like, and that's the reason why I consider this a common assessment is because it facilitates that conversation, and we're all working commonly off of the same, we're assessing commonly.
Yeah, I agree. John, anything you want to add with your experiences there and maybe jump on board with what Russ just said?
Well, and I think when I look at it, I think this is a clear example of where it can be qualitative and there's still data. So it still retains some of that quantitative aspect. You can still compare. It connects exactly to the standard. It says the standard is right there. Produce clear writing that is appropriate to the task, purpose, and audience. And the danger, I'm a big fan of authentic assessment, but the danger that I've seen in authentic assessment is that too often you're not really analyzing standards. So a great example is people who create very product-based rubrics for projects, and kids get graded on how pretty it is or how neat it is or whatever, how creative it is. All those things are important, but that doesn't tell you whether they learn the standard. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is it is subjective. Those things become subjective, and how do you maintain the reliability and the validity of an assessment at that point? Well, what this process does is it is an authentic assessment. If you're bringing in that student work, if you're talking about the student work, if you're even having teachers grade assessments from multiple classes, for example, or just having those conversations about what this looks like as a student sample, then I think that it becomes much more objective and much more reliable at that point. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I was just really giddy when you said the piece on how you're interested and you believe in authentic assessment, but you're also able to point out the weakness in that specific thing. You know, I think of a movement where maybe kids should always be creating, you know, rather than writing a paper about it, let's create a video on, you know, the causes of the Civil War or something like that. I think that's a good idea, but as you said, the danger or the rubrics that we might create may focus more on the video, the product, than the content itself.
Well,
I think when we bring that together and assume it's some sort of common assessment, it really has to take a unique group of teachers to look past the video effects, look past all of that cool stuff, to really find out, does this kid understand the causes of the Civil War, for example?
And I think one thing that, when you mentioned that, the video example, is I think there's a push as people have moved toward differentiated instruction, that's absolutely great, and I agree with it. But there's been a push to essentially sometimes ignore standards in the name of differentiating. And the example I see is if students need to write, they need to write. And I've seen teachers say, well, we'll have them do a video and a podcast and writing was involved. That's fine, writing was involved, but that's not the same as you by law need to teach this standard, period.
Mm-hmm.
But take the law out of it. Take compliance out of it. Students need to be able to read and write. They need to be able to think mathematically. There's nothing wrong with those things. And a danger I've seen, I know I'm getting off topic here, it gets out of assessment, but a danger I see is in the push towards student-centered learning and in the push towards differentiation, there's so many misconceptions. Oh, learning style. The data has already proven that learning style is a pile of crap. There's nothing to back it up. Oh, well, that's what they enjoy doing. That's fine. If a kid enjoys Angry Birds, great. Let them write a functional text on how to do Angry Birds. But don't let them think that Angry Birds is a great way to replace the necessary skills involved in understanding physics. If you can create things that are meaningful, that allow them to hit some of those things, and they're still relating back to the standards, then that's great. And one of the challenges that I've seen with the differentiation is a lot of times teachers will differentiate instruction and not know how to assess that well. Mm-hmm. What I see with something like this is you could, when I look at this rubric, you could give a lot of leeway for student freedom and for student choice and for, you know, students really have a lot of freedom on this assignment. And yet, the assessment is absolutely common. Mm. So, sorry, I feel like I just went on a rabbit trail. You can pull me back into assessment.
But. No, that's okay, because I actually made a note that connects with that. So one of the things I'm most excited about, or probably the thing that I'm most excited about with what we've got here, especially that we're starting, you know, so quick in the school year, these are the rubrics that we will always use with these standards. You know, so you've got the standard on the left, produce clear writing that is appropriate to task, purpose, and audience. All year long, whenever we assess that standard, this is the rubric we'll use. We can always relate back to it. You know, and I can say to my PLC, you know what? I've been noticing lately that in what my students are producing, they're not getting this clear writing. And they can say, okay, how do you know? You know, and I can say, well, I've got these blog posts that students have written, you know, take a look at these, whatever, and then that, boom, we're into the conversation. You know, it's almost like a common assessment that wasn't even common. You know, it's only common because we're all so familiar with how we're assessing it, you know, with the tool that's being used to assess it, the rubric itself, that any conversation about that standard just continues that common assessment conversation. Does what I'm saying make sense?
It makes sense. It does. Yeah. And I think one of the things that impresses me about it is, I guess that's when it's that notion of it's specific enough to tie exactly into the standard, but you've created something that's broad enough that it can apply to, that can be applied to a one element of a project. You know, that's one of the things that drives me crazy. If you're assessing standards on a project, for example, and you're all about project-based learning, why does the project itself have to have just one assessment? You know, why couldn't something like this be a something that you fill out while students do a project? Because really, you wouldn't have one unit assessment for an entire unit. And projects are essentially a more rigid, systematic, holistic, you know, pros and cons to all of that style of organizing units of study.
Hmm. All right, let's dive into kind of a different angle now of this whole conversation. So you guys are both currently teachers, and you're both teachers that have potentially had some not so great experiences with common assessments or within your teams and going through the common assessment process, maybe some hiccups along the way. And then obviously you've had some great experiences too. So we're going to start out with a question I'll ask to you guys, and then we'll do kind of the flip side as well. So the question is, what do teachers need from administrators to really make this whole process, this ideal we keep talking about, and you guys have close to the ideal in practice, what do you need from your school administrators? I'm a district guy. What do you need from the district folks, the building folks, really to make this reality? Maybe we could use this as kind of a way of helping those that are listening or watching take some action back to their schools as well. And, of course, we'll flip the conversation as well. What do administrators need from teachers, too? So go ahead, guys. Maybe Russ, you want to start?
Yeah. I'll start just because I had this conversation with my administrator this morning. It was just such a great conversation. We talked about how what and this is speaking for myself, but also in conversation with other teachers and stuff. What's really been great is I don't know the right word. It's not permission. Permission's not the word, but it's maybe kind of that push or that nudge to go ahead and think outside the multiple choice. You know that. It's just, I just feel like there are so many preconceptions about assessment, and those preconceptions fall right into common assessments, and especially because when, like I said, as teachers who are just beginning this common assessment idea, it feels like natural or easy or something just to take an assessment that would be really easy to give to everybody. You know, let's make this 10-question multiple choice assessment, and then everybody can take it, and they can all take it on the same date, and it won't take long, and we can look through the results. You know, that just feels like the natural way to do common assessments. But I want administrators to push teachers to think.
But all of that worked well for me because I was then able to show my philosophy of assessment, show guiding questions, show why I believed that we had assessment in terms of finding intervention and enrichment, helping to see their mastery towards standards, but also, you know, why my philosophy is never give a zero, why my philosophy is it's about learning and not work completion, and all of those different things. And then I was able to show him the letter that I was going to send home to parents about my style and why it's a little bit different. And it's amazing when you really prove that to a principal, and this is a very traditional principal, but when you demonstrate all of that, you've now proven that you're a professional. And I've never met a principal at that point who's going to back away. Now, it's possible that there are. There's some, I'm sure, that are just jerks. But for the most part, if you do that, then you've proven that you're a professional. It just takes work to accomplish that.
So what I heard from you, John, is being willing to accept being willing to accept a teacher's idea, particularly when they put a lot of thought into it. That's one of the things I heard from you. Another thing I heard from you is kind of a sense of, again, not feeling like we're putting teachers in a box. Just by saying, oh, common assessments or common form assessments are a good idea, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to do X, Y, and Z exactly how I might see X, Y, and Z. It might be A, B, C, and Z instead. And when you figure all that out, to write a book about it, too. Seriously, that's really cool that you had that time to go through that. I would have a lot of respect for a teacher who put that much thought into it. That's really cool. Really cool.
I'm curious with you, Matt, because you're in a district position, correct?
Yes, yep.
What is it like for you to engage with those types of dialogues with teachers?
Yeah, in my district, it's maybe a little bit unique because we have three buildings, about 1,300 or 1,400 students is all total. And so it's not really a big pecking order, you know what I'm saying? Like, if someone wants to call me up, they don't have to leave a message with the secretary or ask permission from their principal to talk to someone from central office or something like that. I'm just as accessible as a site manager or site principal, as you mentioned there, too. So what I have to do is I have to kind of take those types of conversations in, you know, that you just mentioned, a 9-page philosophy on assessment. I have to try to help figure out how does that shape into the vision that we have moving forward. And then sometimes I have to have either conversation with that teacher and say, hey, have you talked with your principal about this to see how it fits into kind of a building subvision for the district vision. Or sometimes I might just bring in the principal, you know, at a later time and kind of rehash the whole thing in front of them. One of my weaknesses as a district guy is sometimes I just want to make it happen right then and there without necessarily bringing in the principal to make sure that it's kosher at the time for that specific area. I want to see action quickly, and I don't really like to wait around for asking for permission sometimes. And maybe I should admit that publicly, but I just did, so it's live now. But I that's why I'd be just really pleased if someone like you, John, had that conversation, like, how can we make that happen tomorrow in your classroom? Let's just do it.
And I just want to clarify, I don't recommend that everybody would go out. Like, if somebody listens to this, probably think you're crazy to go. You know, my style is, I articulate myself better in writing. I know that. I'll ramble in person. But somebody else could just as easily come in with a series of questions that they have for an administrator saying, hey, what's your philosophy on assessment? What do you believe about assessment? And does this line up with what we're actually doing in our school? And sort of just reflective type questions, getting the principal to that place and then saying, I ask all that because I want to shift away from multiple choice because I don't think it's the best practice to use, and here's why. And it can totally be a really horizontal kind of conversation, you know, for me, it was easier to hand somebody something and say, hey, this is my thought, can we talk about it? But somebody else could, Russ, you said you had a conversation this morning. I mean, it could be just as easily a conversation rather than something that's, printed and handed up and bulleted, pointless, for people to read.
So, Matt, the question comes back to you. What are you looking for from teachers? Do you feel like you already answered that, or you got other things you want to talk about with that?
I think kind of one more piece to it. As I think about my transition 2 years ago from classroom teacher, high school math teacher, to now a district guy, the biggest challenge was, and it continues to be, in this specific context of education, it is moving away from just thinking about how it relates to me to instead how it relates to the whole. So, before I think, well, here's exactly how, for example, standards-based grading might look in a high school math classroom. Now when I am, and our district is moving forward in that direction, I have to now think about, well, what's that look like in language arts? What's that look like in art? What's that look like in music? And I don't necessarily have all those answers, but sometimes people expect me to have those answers. And so I expect when a teacher comes to me, even though I didn't necessarily do that as a teacher, to be open and willing to the idea that, yes, you might want it to happen this way, but that ideal or that specific way of doing it may not be realistic for our entire school. And I think it's not necessarily just the idea itself, but the timing of that idea. For example, multiple choice common form of assessments. I don't think that's a great idea. But given the chance, given the opportunity between not doing common form of assessments and doing common form of assessments with multiple choice, I will choose common form of assessments with multiple choice so that, in my opinion, the team can have that conversation that you just explained, Russ and John, that eventually they're going to figure out that it doesn't work out very well. And so I can then enter into the conversation, or a building principal can enter into the conversation and help be there and explain why multiple choice doesn't work out very well with a common form of assessment. But the guy down the hall might be like, no way, like there's no way we should let them do that. We need to force them to do something else. Well, you know what? You see it your way because you already have that experience of seeing how multiple choice wasn't effective. I need to let this team over here have that experience. I need you to trust me that them seeing that experience and not having success with that experience is in their best interest at that time. And that trust doesn't always happen because the classroom teacher, again, I put myself in the classroom teacher's shoes, I don't see that. Crap, I already failed. Why should we let them fail too? Sometimes they have to fail too. So that's just an example of I need you to trust me that sometimes the specific way or sequence of events, because it worked out that way for you, may or may not be the same as someone else. Does that make any sense?
I think it does. I think one of the things that came up a couple times right there was the concept of trust and why that's absolutely necessary for these things to happen. I think there's an assumption sometimes that teachers are lacking the skills to do common assessment, and they might. But more often than that, it's paradigm shifts that have to happen. And those paradigm shifts typically don't happen without a relationship of trust. You're asking somebody to move from ABCD grades to standard-based grading to make a ton of paradigm shifts from work completion to learning, from averaging to mastery, all of these different shifts that are necessary. And just giving the rationale or just giving a training isn't always going to be enough. People have to trust the person who's saying that and the process. Mm-hmm. And they have to trust that ultimately that these shifts are going to be successful. And that's asking for a lot of trust. And that's why I think that goes back to what Russ had said about the notion of a journey. If teachers are just doing a weekly common assessment and comparing the data, they've already made typically 20 huge paradigm shifts at that point. They're pretty far along in the journey. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, any closing thoughts? I'll start. I just figured out how to do the Google Docs thing. So I'm fairly certain they could not see the Google Doc the whole time. So we will make sure that the link is in the show notes. So sorry about that. Next time.
I had something I was going to say real quick. I shared my sample assessment grid. I know I've mentioned this before to people.
Let me pull. I can pull it up now.
Yeah, you can pull it up now. But I'll tell you what. This is a great example of something that became truly common on our team, and on a team that had started out pretty pretty dysfunctional. And what happened was, you know, I had talked to my principal about the fact that I wanted my report card to look more like this. I wanted this to be what we truly used as a constant monitoring of progress. And the way I did it was I did weekly conferences with students. So they had a consulting conference and they had a coaching conference. And what happened was ahead of time they assessed the prerequisites.
That's for mommy.
This is a math.
I'll come talk to you in a little bit.
This is a math assessment grid. And this is quarterly, so this is your progress towards standards. And this alone, students were relieved when they saw this at the beginning of the quarter to realize that essentially all they were being graded on were these boxes right here. And that they had the entire quarter to match standards. And this was all of the fourth quarter, or this I think is actually third quarter standards turned into student-friendly objectives. And they put the student feedback on one part, the teacher feedback, and then the progress, which was the FAME, was falls far below, approaches, meets, or exceeds, and then the data to prove that. So that whole concept of this is what you got, here's how we know it. And what happened was it started out as something that was okay, and then a teacher said, hey, I kind of like what you're doing right there. Could I use it? And I said, great. And then he said, you know what? My students don't all remember what FFB and approaches and those things are. Could, you know, let's add that to the document. And then another teacher said, I think there has to be a reflection piece involved. And I said, well, they're reflecting on their blogs. No, this document needs a reflection piece. And another teacher said, well, let's help ELL students by putting some sentence stems in it for it. And then I realized, whoa, this connects to enrichment and intervention. Let's have them. So this document grew kind of organically, and it became, and this is the third quarter one, but it became by the end of first quarter something that sounded crazy when I mentioned it to teammates, that they realized this is working. They began to modify it, and we began to use it all year long. And then it kind of went viral. Other teachers on other levels took it and modified it, made it their own. And I share it and mention it not because I think this is the best document in the world. It may be completely irrelevant to somebody listening and to your context. I'm sure, Matt, you're a math teacher. You might be looking at it and going, you know what? There needs to be prerequisite skills and prerequisite concepts. You might disagree with me on how it was created or something. I don't know. But the point is that process became common because we had already made the shift to asking, let's talk about what's working and why. Let's look at what's working and why. And when there's a trust on the team, then you begin to adopt things naturally back and forth. And I just mentioned that kind of as my final thing that I would bring up, because sometimes common assessments and PLCs can be about filling out forms and about, there's a lot of forms, and about accountability and those types of things. And they have their place, but to kind of balance it, the beauty of common assessments is the collaboration that happens and is the mindset that we're going to be humble professionals asking one another what we're doing that's working. And we're going to be transparent with each other, and we're even going to move from transparency into being truly vulnerable with one another about what's not working. And that feels so counterintuitive because it feels like you're going to get crushed when you do it. But that's when we move from being a dysfunctional team to a functional team. And I don't think that would have happened if we weren't doing common assessment. Those would have been great ideas, but the common assessment itself was what enabled all of those things to happen. When Bill said the common assessments are the heart of PLC, it had a knee-jerk reaction, said, no, it's trust, it's transparency, it's collaboration. Then I was like, those things don't happen if you're not planning and talking about common assessments together.
That's a pretty sweet endorsement there, John. That's cool.
Well, he's pretty awesome. I'm an avid reader of his blog. So,
Russ, anything left to add, buddy?
Nope.
All right. We're going to see if we can end with our usual jingle here. How's that? You guys hear that? John, I don't know about this end of podcast tradition, but we always end in a certain way. Signing off, episode 12 here. We are here.
With students in mind.
How are you doing, everybody?